welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roerink, and Jack Spencer. A little later, Sri Tanadar, gubernatorial candidate, will be joining us. And we actually pre-recorded that interview, guys. And Sri left us a couple blue suitcase books on the MERS World Headquarters meeting table here. And make sure to bring those home. I don't think he signed them, but they are there for your reading when you're interested in reading these, Jack. First, guys, I want to talk about Bernie Sanders being in Lansing yesterday. John, I wanted to get your impression on this. What's the point? Why is he even bothering?
I suspect one of the reasons he's bothering is, quite frankly, I think he wants his voters activated in this year in terms of sort of turning back the Trump administration. You think about the fact that there were a lot of disaffected Bernie supporters during the 2016 presidential election. There are even reports that a percentage of them wound up voting for Trump rather than voting for the Democratic standard bearer. I think it's probably in the best interest of the Democratic Party that his group of voters be activated.
It seemed interesting, Jack, that he's going after the Trump tax cuts, which seems like it's impacting quite a few people for the positive. There's more people who are getting a tax cut because of this plan than are not getting a tax cut. Why is he even going down this road?
Well, obviously it's going to apply to people who are not going to necessarily be affected by it in a way that's going to just be outstanding. Obviously, you know, if you're suddenly going to be bringing home $300 more a month or something, you're not going to necessarily, it's going to be hard to convince people like that these tax cuts are something negative. But there are an awful lot of people, college kids, situations like that, that really are not going to be impacted. So they end up being able to follow the concept that, oh, this is only going to be for rich people. As far as why Bernie's doing this, I believe these are the key people in 2018. I believe these are the people who did not show up in 2016, or 15% was the number, as I recall, of Bernie supporters ended up voting for Trump. So we're talking about literally 15% of Bernie supporters voting for Trump. Without them, Trump would not have won.
But he didn't talk about any gubernatorial candidates on our side. He didn't talk about any of the candidates.
No, but
he's encouraging people to get involved, though.
Right, he's encouraging people to get involved. But the also thing, you know, think about the tax thing, too, is, and I forgot about, we'd have to look up the date, but I believe the withholding changes of that tax law come into effect. So people are going to start to see some of those changes. And I suspect that there's probably some thinking on the Democratic side that, you know, beat this thing down before people start to see a positive impact in their paycheck and start to think, well, maybe this isn't such a bad thing the Republicans got going.
Clearly, they're trying to link this to the 1%. During his speech, he talked about how 83% of the benefit that is coming from the tax cuts are benefiting the 1%. And meanwhile, we still have a healthcare system that doesn't work, that we're paying a lot for but not getting a lot in return. You've seen Trump kicking people off healthcare who were enjoying it under the Affordable Care Act, under Obama. So it's like he's weaving the liberal message, the progressive message, and at the same time trying to beat down the Republicans for what the one good thing that they can claim for in the first year that he's been in office. It seems like it's a pretty popular message, though. Would you agree, Jack? 1,500 people, Lansing, non-presidential year?
Well, we're talking about college town, more or less, and those are the base people that he would talk to. But, you know, I don't know that it's anything new to be talking. Bernie was the one who said that they kicked 31 million people off of Obamacare when they passed the legislation that went along with this tax thing that got rid of the mandate saying people had to buy it. Now, whether that's kicking people off it or not, that's another question. It's saying you don't have to buy it anymore. To his particular audience, these are people who, number one, I question whether a lot of these people are going to be seeing a big positive impact from the taxes. Okay, if you're a college kid, I don't think you're going to be seeing a lot of impact from the tax cuts. If you're on welfare or a lower income person, I'm not so sure you see this big impact. So he knows his audience, and he knows who he's talking to. My bigger question is, does this stuff stick when you're doing it in February? How long does it stick? Does it really last all the way until next November?
Can he keep the momentum? That's always the big question, right, for these kind of things. It sounds great in February. How is it going to sound in October and early November? And what is that going to mean for any of the candidates or the Democratic nominee, whoever that may be? And we'll have to stay tuned on that. Okay, so we have four Republican candidates who have the very strong potential of making the ballot in August 7 of later this year. Their path to victory are very different. And John, let's start with Bill Schuette. What is his path to the nomination and to victory?
I think his path is, first of all, don't stumble. I think if you look at his position in the polls, if you look at his organization and the sort of the team members he has, he's got a very strong campaign going right now. I think the key is don't trip and fall over the MSU investigation. Don't trip and fall over anything related to Flint. To a certain extent, you got to look aggressive, but you got to play conservative ball when you're in his position.
Jack, what do you think here? It would seem like as long as he doesn't screw up, he should be able to win the nomination, yes?
Well, I think part of his advantage is also that he has more than one person chasing him. So I think it'd be a little harder for him if there was only one other person going after him on the Republican side. So that's to his advantage. I think it is. He's out on the lead. And he just has to continue to hold that lead and avoid any big mistakes or anything that's going to allow anybody to catch up with him.
At some point, does he have to participate in these forums, John, the ones that Callie and Kohlbeck are having across the state?
No, I think there's so much distance between him and the rest of the pack, I don't think he has to at all.
At what point does he have to engage folks? Does he have to spend money at some point, Jack? Is he just going to be watching polling, and as long as he's still within a double-digit lead on everyone, he doesn't have to spend any money?
I think it depends on polling, number one. Number two, how much he trusts the polling. If he feels he has a good handle on the polling and the polling continues to show him with a healthy lead, there's no reason for him to go out and borrow trouble.
Now let's move on to Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly's path to the nomination is what, John?
Bill Schuette trips and falls and makes a stumble, bobbles the ball. I mean, I really think there's that much difference between these two candidates.
So Schuette's going to have to screw up in order
Schuette's for... going to have to screw up at this point for Kelly to win.
Jack, would you agree with that assessment?
My assessment all along has been that what he was told by, shall we call his help or his handlers, was you just do a regular election campaign and you could finish a real solid second. And I think that's why he did this whole gambit and everything with involving the part-time legislature and so on, was to get his name connected with something that makes him look like more like a rebel. To what extent that has or hasn't worked, you know, I'll let other people judge. I do think it's very hard to tell how many people he actually contacted that associate him as an outsider at this point. I'm just not sure how that plays. But I also think that he kind of has to keep Kohlbeck in that race, I think, at least for a while, because I think Kohlbeck maybe naturally pulls some people off that might otherwise be in a Schuette's camp.
Well, and I think that's why these town halls that they're having are very important, because I think he wants this to be a four-person race, a legitimate four-person race. He doesn't want this to be between him and Schuette, because if it's between him and Schuette, he loses, right? So if he has Patrick Kohlbeck, let's say he's polling, Kohlbeck polls 15, 20%. Where's that support coming from? That's coming off of Schuette. That's not coming off Kelly per se. And then what about Jim Hines? Is Jim Hines pulling any support off Kelly? I don't think so. I think that's coming off of, again, Bill Schuette. So I think that they're going to try and continue these road shows and do as much drip as they can. That said, Kelly's got to spend some money at some point. And the money that he spent last year on his big rollout for the part-time legislature, I don't know if that has any carryover to this year or not, but he's going to have to do that same type of thing in order to get Schuette scared. Kohlbeck's path to victory, John.
Schuette and Kelly both have to stumble.
I think he has to, whether it's from the people in front of him stumbling or from something he does himself, he's going to have to do something. I've always felt that with Kohlbeck, there must be some level of support that he reaches where he can then go to certain people and get money.
Right.
And I suspect, I've always had the feeling with him, there was some threshold he has to hit. And if he can hit that threshold in terms of convincing certain people on the far right that he's worth investing in, I think that's the biggest key to Kohlbeck. And whether he's hit it or not, I tend to doubt it, but I've always wondered. I can't imagine him staying in the race just to finish a distant third.
He's going to have to run into some money, though. And if he runs into some money, he's dangerous.
He's very dangerous. You give him $3 million right now, and suddenly he's a player, and he's very dangerous.
But one of the things I want to bring up, though, you brought up the issue of a sort of Colbeck peeling off support from Schutte, and that kind of being Cali's strategy. You know, it's reminiscent of what Snyder did, but it's a little different, though, because remember, when it was Hoekstra and it was Cox sort of splitting up the conservative vote, they were on either side of the state. And I just wonder how much you can apply that sort of same strategy to Colbeck and Schutte. Does it play out the same way? What do you think?
I don't know that Cali can reproduce what Snyder did because we've had 8 years of Snyder. Mm-hmm. And taking on the Snyder mantle, it's no longer fresh, it's no longer new. People are liking what they like about him and not liking what they don't like about Snyder, Republican side. And I think that's a mixed bag for Cali. I just don't think it is the same. I think John's right. It's not the same dynamic. He's not a fresh person. I still think people forget that Snyder ended up winning the Tea Party vote when he ran in 2010. People forget mm-hmm. that because, and everybody in town here is going, well, he's a moderate. They didn't even think about the fact that, to the average person out there, he was the outsider.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And yet, here in town, it was this, hey, my gosh, we just look at the Republicans, they just elected this moderate. And it was a total misread of what happened. They voted for the outsider. And Cali attempted to be the outsider, which is a real tough thing for considering his situation as lieutenant governor with his part-time legislature thing. But I think it's far more difficult for Cali. He's kind of got to do three or four things and balance several balls at the same time. I think it's a lot more difficult.
And he's also doing it while embracing Snyder. I mean, among Republicans, Snyder's pretty popular. I mean, you get to the general public and Snyder's at, what, high 30s, low 40s, right? Mm-hmm. But among Republicans, they like Snyder. He's done a pretty good job. I wouldn't say among, like, arch conservatives, but your middle-of-the-road Republicans, they're not going to quibble about what Snyder's done.
No,
Cali's a continuation of that, and I think he's embraced it. He can't run away from it.
No, he can't run away from it, and he has embraced it. But again, even among Republicans, though, don't you suspect there's a little bit of Snyder fatigue? I want something different. And if Cali is part two of what we've had for 8 years, just by virtue of time, you're going to want something different. I mean, that's kind of the history of this whole state politically.
Well, yeah, but I mean, bunker Republicans, don't Republicans have this mindset that there's an heir apparent that's ready to run and it's kind of their turn? I mean, whether it's Mitt Romney or it's Bob Dole or if it's George Bush, I mean, it seems like there's this attitude that it's this person's turn. It's Bill Schutte's turn. He's been sitting here waiting. We've known he's been running for governor since the time he got into Congress. I mean, it's almost like this is an inevitability, and it's now going to be Schutte, and you have to break that mindset that, well, you know what? It's not inevitable that Schutte's going to be our nominee. That's an extremely hard thing to break, and I think that's the best thing he's got going for him, that people just presume that he's going to be the nominee, so we're just going to go ahead and vote for him because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think there was more to it than that. I think Schutte getting the Trump endorsement was huge, as an out, being able to have that label and actually break away from being sort of the lifetime politician to get Trump's endorsement was really helpful for Schutte. I don't know. There's the in-party thing. I mean, this was the argument into why Hillary got the nomination for the Dems as the heir apparent.
Right.
So that's not just a Republican thing. But I really still think that the problem Cali has is I still believe he should find a couple of things that he breaks away from Snyder on. Maybe it'd be by agreement between he and Snyder. I still think that would be a good move for Cali to do. And I think this was sort of this effort, to whatever extent people think it was successful or not, on the part-time legislature. It was something to give him something other than me, hey, look, here's a guy like Snyder who's in there. He's been his lieutenant governor, and I just don't know if being the smartest guy in the room is going to be the image you want for this follow-up election.
Jim Hines' path to victory, John, is?
All the other three candidates stumble. In short, a miracle happens, a political miracle happens.
Jack?
Yeah, sort of a demolition derby type thing. They all run into each other, and something magical happens in June and July, and somehow sets up for Hines to win on a.
In June, the three other candidates are on the same Shepler ferry that goes down in the Straits.
Something like that. And of course, the Democrats would say who wins, and they'd say everybody then. But that would be what the Dems would say.
You know, Hines has got a little bit of money, and he is spending it on TV. The problem is he doesn't have Snyder money. He doesn't have Sri Tanadar money, where he can go out on an enormous blitz and spend. I mean, he's doing what he can with what he has.
And his ads aren't bad. I just don't see how his circumstances change such that anything less than a miracle has to happen for him to win the.
Yeah, but miracles happen.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
All right, guys. Let's move on to somebody who's hoping for a miracle. I wouldn't say he's got a miracle. He needs a miracle, but he is Sri Tanadar, and he wants to be the next governor, and he's joined us here at MERS World Headquarters. Join us this week for today's podcast is Sri Tanadar, Democratic gubernatorial candidate. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, Sri.
Kyle, appreciate your invitation, and I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Well, I got to tell you, I just can't seem to get away from you. You're on TV. I got mail from you on my mailbox. I got a robocall from you a few days ago. You're certainly opening up the pocketbook, aren't you?
Yes. You know, as you know, I put $6 million of my own money into this campaign. Now, I know Snyder put $6 million also when he ran for the first time, but that was kind of a pocket change for him. This is big money. This is a big chunk of my savings, and I'm doing it because I'm passionate about wanting to take this state to the next level.
What kind of results do you feel like you're getting so far with the advertisements you've done?
Oh, I'm getting amazing results. I'm walking around in Lansing. I had a little bit of time, and I was at the Senate building because I met with the school board, the public universities board. And I'm amazed in terms of how many people recognize me now. 6 months ago, nobody knew me. And, you know, people stop me in the... I can't walk a block without people stopping and saying, thanks, I saw your ad, I've seen your positions, I'm voting for you.
That's got to be very reassuring as you're moving forward in this.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I can go to a meeting in Detroit, downtown Detroit, and there are about 100 people, and 50 of them know me.
That's something else, and that is something you can't say 6 weeks ago, or 6 months ago.
Right? Yes.
Tell me how this process has been for you. Clearly, we've still got a ways to go as far as the Democratic primary, but what has surprised you about this journey, and maybe what hasn't surprised you?
Well, this is a large state, and it takes a lot of money to, you know, take my ideas, let people know who I am. Mm-hmm. I still see a lot of the establishment that want to play it safe, whether it is the trade associations or unions or, you know, most of them want to play it safe. And the elected officials want to play it safe. Nobody really want to be at odds with what they presume to be the candidate that is going to succeed. That's what they feel. And no one is able to think outside of the box. And so that's a little difficult, I've seen. I expected that. But I would like people to be more open-minded. Because the voters are going to be open-minded.
Well, and that was going to be my question about open-mindedness, because you have two opponents who would seem to appeal to the Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders dynamic that we saw in 2016, right? So you've got Hillary Clinton supporters maybe gravitating toward Gretchen Whitmer, kind of your middle of the road, traditional Democrats, union folks, whereas the liberal, more progressive people are being appealed to by Abdul al-Sayed. So where do you kind of fit in? Where do you see you getting your votes from?
Well, as you've seen my commercials, and I say I am the most progressive candidate in the race, you know, I'm like a Bernie Sanders with a fiscal responsibility. So I call myself fiscally savvy Bernie Sanders.
Okay. Now, you call yourself the most progressive candidate in the race, and I think Abdul al-Sayed would take umbrage to that.
Well, he's probably just as progressive as I am. For largely, we have, you know, single-payer healthcare. I stand for, I want to close for-profit charter schools. You know, I want to shut down Line 5. So a lot of my positions are very progressive, and I think he shares some of that. Like, I have taken a pledge not to take a single penny from corporation special interest PACs. So I think it's not about am I 95% or he is 94%. So I think I bring more than my progressive ideas. I bring a lifetime of learning and experiences. You know, I'm 63 years old. I have lived in poverty. I've worked as a janitor when I was growing up and worked hard to bring my family out of poverty. So I understand how 22% of Michiganders struggle to put food on the table, struggle to take care of healthcare needs of their families, their education needs. So I come with that firsthand understanding. And we haven't seen much of compassion and love from our governor in the last 7 years. And I bring that understanding. I bring that compassion. But at the same time, I also have financial skills. I have ran small businesses for the last 26 years.
Now, your opponents could also say, though, while you have run businesses, it hasn't been without some bumps in the road, and that you have had suits filed against you. You've had people come against you in court on more than one occasion. Well, does that speak to a fault on your part?
Well, you know, businesses often have lawsuits. You know, there are financial disputes. These are normal. If you go look at McDonald's, say, for example, they probably have thousands of lawsuits. If you go to Ford or GM or any corporation, this is happens in corporations. And just because someone sued me doesn't make them right. And I am fighting this. And because I am running for public office, there's always more of a tendency to, because I'm more likely to settle something. And, you know, I'm a fighter. And I see no truth. I see no substance in this lawsuit.
You're talking about the most recent one.
The most recent one, yeah. And I'm going to fight it, and I'm going to win it. But I don't want to pay them hush money to settle it, because I have done nothing wrong.
Let's talk about one of your other opponent, Abdul Al-Sayed. There's some questions about whether he should be able to make the ballot or not, because he lived in New York within the last 4 years, registered to vote there. Is that something that you see yourself getting involved in, either with a suit or anything of that nature?
No, you know, I feel with all the name recognition we have and the response that we're getting overwhelming response. We're starting to get now unsolicited donations to our campaign. We're not even asking for, and we keep every day there are donations coming in. Every day, I have 45,000 followers on my Facebook today, 45,000. Now, when I started my website on my Facebook in June, when I announced my candidacy just 8 months ago, Senator Whitmer had 41,000. Today she has 50,000. So while she gained 9,000, I have gained 45,000.
So to answer my question, though, is that something that you would go after, his residency?
No, I think I'm running my own campaign.
Okay, so you don't feel like you have to go there.
We are already surging so fast. I was the fourth candidate to enter this race. But, you know, we'll find out. We'll find out some from polls, but I just think that I am certainly in the second place right now. So I am the challenger to Senator Whitmer at this time.
But he would argue that he has the support of a lot of on-the-ground progressive organizations that the ground troops of which would be very helpful in a primary, you would think.
Oh, absolutely. But look, 45,000 followers in the last 6 months. That's ground support, right? I mean, in the same period when we started, he had 15,000 followers in his Facebook when we started. So, and he's now has about 35,000. So he's gone from 15,000 to 35,000. We've gone from zero to 45,000. So we are a surging candidacy. With our television, we are the only ones that are on television. We're the only ones that are making mailings. And we're going to run this campaign very well. And we are going to surprise a lot of the pundits. Right? Look at the pundits. Back then, Barnier would have been the choice of governor. People would have said Barnier or Mike Cox would have been our governor if the media was right or the pundits were right. And today, people are discounting me, especially the media. But we are surging, and very soon, media will have to acknowledge the gains we have made.
What's been the hardest part of this race for you so far, running for governor? Has it been having to travel?
No, I love it. I've sold my business.
Right.
Both my sons are gainfully employed. One of them is an entrepreneur. So I have no respect. My wife is at home, very supportive of me. So I don't have anything else that occupies my time. So I am campaigning 24/7. Every waking hour, I am thinking about the campaign or driving, talking to media or talking to voters or traveling all over Michigan. This is fun. I wish I had done this sooner.
That's great. Now, one other thing I want to ask you about. In this state, particularly in Southeast Michigan, we have not had a good track record of electing people who don't have European names.
Yes.
And we have seen that in the past with Taj, I remember a candidate in the 11th Congressional, and Anil Kumar, for example. How do you hope to combat that, or what's been your attitude in trying to defeat that kind of trend that we've had here in the state?
Look, our state has huge problems. Our education is 35th in the nation. Our per capita income is so low. There is so many problems in infrastructure. If I take our state from the 30th to the 10th, does it matter what my name is or how the name sounds? If I invest in infrastructure and take our state to the best, does it matter where I was born? You know, I bring a lot of energy. I bring a lot of skill sets. We're going to have a recession in the next 4 years or so, if not sooner. And it would be a nightmare to have a career politician as Michigan's next governor. You know, we need financial savvy. We need someone that's not beholden to corporate interests. So I think people voted for Barack Obama, and his name wasn't a factor, or the color of his skin wasn't a factor. And I think once people hear my ideas, once people see my energy, once they see my resume and what I have accomplished, I don't think my color of my skin is going to matter. I don't think my name is going to matter. In fact, people in all over Michigan are already know how to say my name.
Are you ever in a bad mood? It seems like you're always smiling. You always seem to be in a good mood.
I'm always in a good mood because I'm always doing what I'm passionate about. Whether I'm going for education or whether I'm running a business, you know, I am always in a good mood because I'm following my passion and running the state, making a difference in the lives of Michiganders is my passion. I am 63 years old, and I have decided to devote rest of my life to public service. And I'm passionate about it, and that's why I am putting a big chunk of my retirement saving into this campaign. I'll put more to win this race.
Do you think it's contagious? Good moods are contagious?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we need to have a leader that's a strong leader. Look, MSU stuff is happening. Our governor has stayed out of it, you know. If I was a governor, I would, you know, go in there and take action, make things happen. You know, we're not going to get a fair investigation through Bill Schuette's office. Our governor, under the name of civility, hasn't acted and hasn't shown the leadership that this state needs. You know, he's so much, you know, he's taking victory laps and talking about numbers in his state of the state. And, you know, people are hurting and people need help. And he doesn't get it. And I think it's good. I think it's good to be passionate. I think we need a strong leader who can change this state and who has the confidence to change it and who has the energy and who has the passion and who is fearless. Being fearless, I think, is number one skill set that we need.
Sri Tanadar, he is a Democratic candidate for governor. Appreciate you making the trip to MERS World headquarters. I think you're the first gubernatorial candidate to come to MERS World headquarters as a candidate so far this cycle.
And I'll come here as a candidate many more times, and I'll come here as a governor, I promise.
I appreciate it. Thank you. That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Jack and John and Sri Tanadar for joining us, AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. John, while you were gone, we had a significant development here at MERS World headquarters. The stairs now look beautiful.
Yes, they are. They did a nice job on them. It's a great company that we used before at my house to do some cement work. We had some cracked up stairs up in the front that are now all fixed. And then next on the agenda is improving our back ramp.
Wow, that's going to be great.
So that mean we're ramping things up?
We're ramping up here at MERS.
Wow, that's some great punnery. Well, I can tell you that watching all that concrete dust spread around, you picked a great time to not be around. It looked like a massive pig pen convention outside for a couple days there. They did a pretty good job, and if anybody drove by our headquarters on Ottawa and saw the police tape in front of the front door, it was not a crime scene.
It was just caution tape. Don't step on what's in
there. All right, thanks, guys. I'm Kyle Malin. Until next week, take care.
If you feel like that's what you want to do.